Money FM 89.3, best of weekends.
Quick points before we get our expert on. Yep. Number one, I've read, and the professor will confirm this, that the Indian variant, as it's being called, is up to 50% more transmissible than previous variants. That's what I've heard from the UK side. Number two, there was a terrible, sad story in the UK. One guy, 45, fit, run, cycled regularly, already had his first vaccine, is now in a coma. So I know that's only one story. It's out there, it's transmissible, and just because you've had your first vaccine, even your second vaccine straight away, there's a period, you're not immune, you're not invulnerable. We've got to do the right thing.
I was just reading this, they've just come to some conclusion that the Pfizer vaccine is actually better if you wait something like 3 months for the second dose.
Right.
It amps the ability for it to fight off infections. Anyway, we're going to talk about many of these things right now.
Yep.
Our first guest of the 10 o'clock hour, Xu Li Yang, the Vice Dean of Global Health, leader of infectious diseases and associate professor at NUH. Great to have you on with us, Vice Dean Xu. How are you today?
Hello, I'm good. Yang will do, please.
Sure, fine. Thanks, Yang. It is a strange and slightly, I guess, winsome weekend here that we have, having to go back into restrictive measures. Talk to us first about where we are with the virus itself. We thought we were fighting it well, and then all of a sudden, perhaps it's the latest variant that we've been seeing, there's several of them out there, has come back and really given us a wallop. How do we explain this from a virological standpoint?
I think where we are here is that we understand that the virus will continue to evolve as it spreads. And if it's permitted to spread, it will evolve in a way that makes it more transmissible. And that's what we're seeing with the new variants like the Indian or UK or South African variants. So that's what we see today. Fortunately, none of them are more dangerous than the original Wuhan virus in terms of causing deaths. But nonetheless, more infections is certainly a big concern.
And Yang, on that point, I know there are no absolutes and this thing is moving so quickly, so fastly. I feel sorry for you guys. You can barely keep up with the data research required because these things are mutating so fast. But is there any evidence to suggest that this particular variant, as I'm hearing out of the Western media, is more transmissible than previous variants?
So we know it's taken several weeks for countries like UK, US, and even the WHO to label this as a variant of concern. And that's because they have to piece carefully the data to show whether this variant is more transmissible than other variants of the wild type. But I think the evidence is now fairly conclusive that the Indian variant is more transmissible than the original virus and potentially also more than the UK variants that cause a large part of the spread in UK and Europe.
And a follow-up question to that, Yang, is that we've seen a couple of cases this week. Glenn mentioned it just before we started, of children getting symptoms. Fortunately, not seemingly that serious. Correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, feverish symptoms and so on. Is there any evidence to suggest that children are more susceptible to this particular variant, or what is your take on that?
I think the jury is still out there. Certainly, if the virus is able to spread to more people, that will include more children as well, just as a matter of statistics.
Yeah.
But one of the big comforts, if there are any, from this pandemic is that the virus tends to affect children less. They have milder disease and are mostly asymptomatic, and that seems to also be the case for the Indian and us other new variants.
Yeah, that certainly is good news. And we're speaking with Xu Li Yang, the Vice Dean of Global Health at NUS. And you had a very interesting opinion piece the other day in Today Online, I believe it was 2 days ago, and you talked about how we might exit this, what we call holding pattern of wearing masks, social distancing, travel largely not possible, et cetera. Now, this was before the government announcement on Friday. What do you see now as our way forward through this holding pattern that we've been in now for months?
Thank you. Yes, it does seem that we have been stuck for months, and so has the rest of the world, and particularly in countries that were successful in containing COVID-19, like New Zealand and Australia and China itself, of course. So I think by now we are resigned to the fact that the COVID-19 virus is not going to just disappear like smallpox in 1980 or the original SARS virus. But I think the way forward, and that's just my opinion, is really to vaccinate as many people as we can, including young children, once the relevant studies have been done. The danger of COVID-19 is less in terms of individual health than the fact that exponential spread of the virus can overwhelm our hospitals and healthcare systems, and that leads to a kind of domino effect where there are more deaths from unrelated illnesses because our hospitals are not able to cope. So if the majority of the population is vaccinated, the virus will not be able to spread as quickly. The small proportion of people who are vaccinated but get infected will also be far less likely to require hospital care. So potentially, if you reduce the threat of COVID-19 down to something like influenza or other respiratory viruses that, you know, we as a society have found acceptable to live with, then we can move forward, right? There will be hiccups and reversals along the way, but I think this is really a realistic and achievable target.
Yeah, we're talking to Professor Su Li Yang, the Vice Dean Global Health at NUS. There's a couple of things I wanted to ask you about that, Doctor. Not from the political standpoint, but purely from a medical standpoint. Different countries seem to be responding in different ways. The US Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the now famous CDC, has now said something similar to you, which is that if you're fully vaccinated, President Joe Biden said this, you're fully vaccinated, you don't need to wear a mask, indoors or outdoors. That seems to be slightly at odds with the way that Singapore is going. If the mask seems to show any evidence that it's better to wear than not wear, you wear, because we're very kiasu and we'll take the percentages. That seems to be different to the US, the UK. From a medical standpoint, not political, from a purely medical standpoint, what is your view on mask wearing once you've been vaccinated?
I think the evidence is clear that people who are vaccinated can still get infected. And once they are infected, they can also spread the virus to others, although in a more limited manner. So it makes sense to wear masks even when we are vaccinated, especially if a large proportion of the population is unvaccinated.
Yeah,
but I can also understand where the US is coming from, right? They are seeing their vaccination rates drop because most people now don't want to get vaccinated.
Right.
And there will be incentives put up, including free rides on trains, for instance, in New York.
And lotteries and all kinds of things. Yeah.
We're hearing some shocking free tickets to Met games and Mets games and so on. But it ties in nicely with a question we've just had from one of our listeners and viewers, Angel Sada, who talks about reinfection rates. How often will reinfections happen? Will it be milder? It ties in with what you were saying, that even if you're vaccinated, there is evidence to suggest there's been examples of it. I've read about examples in other countries. People have had the virus, then got it a second time. People have been vaccinated. I was just saying off air before you came on, there was a British guy who had one of the vaccines. He's now in a coma. So what do we know? It's constantly changing. We know that. But what do we know about reinfection rates at the moment?
Well, what we do know is that people who are infected can be reinfected again. And those who have been vaccinated can also be infected. But those rates are far lower than someone who is naive to the virus. I think the US CDC puts up very good statistics, right? They have vaccinated over 115 million people, I think, and less than 0.1% of these have come down with infections, of which some have died. But again, that rate is extremely low. So reinfections can happen because this is a coronavirus, not like the measles virus where we get immunity for life. But we expect those rates to be fairly low, and those who are reinfected to generally have disease that's more mild than before.
Yeah, which is good news, obviously, for those who are getting it. We're speaking with Su Li Yang, the Vice Dean of Global Health at NUS. And Yang, as we look at what's been happening with this concept of herd immunity, some scientists recently have been saying that we might need to get to 80 or 90% or even more vaccination rates before herd immunity can kick in, given the more infectious nature of some of these variants. What have you seen related to this? Do these new kind of raised, elevated percentages make sense to you?
So we are in Singapore, and many of us care about exam marks, right?
Yeah.
But this is not a pass-fail result. We should just try to vaccinate as many as we can. if we can get more than 50 to 60% of the entire population, not the eligible population, vaccinated by next year, I think that would be a great result. I stress entire rather than eligible because really the virus doesn't care if someone is eligible for vaccination or not.
Yeah.
But I think that if the studies show that it's safe and if you do incorporate the COVID-19 vaccines as part of the national childhood immunization schedule, then we will be able to achieve this 80 to 90% vaccination rates more easily.
Yeah.
Yeah. At what
I
point?
I also think that.
Go ahead. Yeah. No, I was just going to say, at what point do you feel like the we'll be able to vaccinate our children down to, you know, 10 or 12 years old? When do you see that? We've seen that starting to come already in the West. Do you sense that will be happening soon in Singapore?
That's right. I think we tend to follow the scientific studies. And so we should be able to start vaccinating those down to the age of 12 soon. And once Pfizer or the other companies release data that show that the vaccine is safe in those by age, 2 years of age, for instance, then we should go there as well.
Yeah. Well, and just a couple of almost clarifications, really, about the vaccination. You mentioned there before that if you're vaccinated, you can still get the virus. I think there's sometimes confusion over that. This idea that, my mother is in the UK. She's had the two vaccines. She thinks she's Captain America now. She thinks she's completely immune. Nothing's going to touch her. And I have to explain to her, having the vaccine doesn't stop you, and correct me if I'm wrong here, doesn't stop you getting the virus. It just means it won't kill you, basically. The symptoms will be much milder. Is that correct, Professor?
Thank you. I think this is a very difficult topic for many because we all hope that a vaccine will prevent infection.
Right? Yeah.
But in reality, what all vaccines do is they allow us to mount a response much faster.
Correct.
If we contact the virus again. And that can result in the infection being beaten off without any symptoms starting, which we see even for the COVID-19 vaccine. But in a proportion of cases, there will be infections that result in generally mild symptoms and much more rarely in severe disease. Right? So the vaccine is not sterilizing, but it does protect against the worst effects of the virus.
Yeah, Yang, I've seen recently, as recent as this morning, that it appears that over 22% of Singapore has been fully vaccinated, 22.5%, 1.28 million people. First off, is that the number that you recognize as being accurate? And secondly, should vaccinations be done yearly, like for the flu, for example, when we're talking about COVID or perhaps new variants that might come out in the future?
So my information is about the same as yours, right? Which is what is released in the public. So we accept that that's likely accurate. We don't really know whether people need annual vaccinations yet for COVID-19. I suspect that's not the case. But likely if there are new variants that emerge and can evade the older vaccines, then the vaccines have to be updated and everyone needs to get a shot again. This is in line with what has been done for influenza, for example.
Right.
And you've just answered that question we had from LL Tan about would we need yearly injections or booster shots. We've got another question coming in from, I think it's Jane Iyer. I mean, this is a broader question. How is Singapore doing with vaccinations? I mean, are you happy with where we're at? And is there anything you, putting you on the spot, or Singapore generally, can do to incentivize those who are reluctant? We can't give them Mets tickets in America, but is there anything you could say or Singapore can do to incentivize anyone who's still reluctant to get a vaccine?
I think there are two things we can do. The first is kind of administrative. We can try to change our professional guidance such that more people become eligible, right? I think our professional guidance is very restrictive compared to what WHO and countries like UK and US have permitted. For instance, people with anaphylaxis, which is a severe allergic reaction to bee stings and shellfish, are currently ineligible for vaccination in Singapore. And that sort of doesn't make too much sense. It's just us being a bit more kiasu than others, right? So if we expand the eligibility criteria and we also allow younger people to be vaccinated, then certainly we can achieve more in terms of vaccination. What can we do to incentivize those now? I'm not the government, but certainly the government, if it chooses, can put up different kinds of incentives, like what's been done in the US to try to get a higher uptake for the vaccination.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I mean, we need people just to do the responsible thing, which is go out and get your jab. I mean, it's easy. Neil, I've got my second one this week. Neil's had his first. And, it's not difficult to do. It's fast. Okay, some of us have had some symptoms afterward. I had a bit of a fever.
Mild.
Aches and pains a little bit, but it doesn't last long. And compared to the value of it, let's hope that many more people get on board. In the meantime, thank you so much for being with us today, Hugh Li Yang, Vice Dean of Global Health and Associate Professor at NUS. I really appreciate your time, and this is such great insight. And we hope you'll come back on the show again.
Thank you for the opportunity, and have a good weekend too.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.